Another interesting trend dealing with online has been consumer recommendations. We're actually getting consumers to recommend products and discuss its warts and all approaches online. And I know that next week, Jupiter Research is preparing a new report on these kinds of online consumer buying trends. And among the things you're going to be looking at was going to be how Netflix has been changing its e-commerce strategy with doing a lot more consumer reviews, even to the extent of booting out the more traditional, well-known household name reviewers. Patty, can you give us a sense of where that trend is and how radical? Because certainly consumer-based reviews have been going on for years. It was one of the hearts of the early Amazon.
Right. It's not a new concept. However, it's gotten relatively slow adoption from online retailers. Currently, according to a Jupiter WebTrack, about 38% of online retailers actually have reviews. Most of them are this is user-generated reviews. Most of them, of those retailers, are in the arena of consumer electronics, and in most cases, outside of the consumer electronic arena, they're online-only retailers. And so the online-only retailers have embraced this as a potential business-building tactic earlier on than the traditional brick-and-mortar or multi-channel or catalog-based retailers. But what we're seeing is a great influx of retail interest in including these kinds of consumer-generated content into their websites because they think it's the right thing to do. But there's been very little real serious measurement about the actual business benefit. You know, we've got some measurement. I think everybody's got their measurement on, consumers ask their friends or tell their friends about a whole lot of, about their good experiences, and consumers trust consumer reviews. So we kind of get that anecdotally, but we don't really know or haven't really known how much it's really driving our businesses. And so what we looked at, in addition to case studies like the ones with Netflix, we looked at consumers who use reviews, consumers who provide reviews, and what their purchase patterns might be. And what we found is though a direct correlation with the amount of sales or the increased purchasing of a consumer is not really correlated with their use of reviews. But those people who provide reviews, who write, they're the heavy communicated, the super communicators, they write 9 reviews a year and make 12 purchases online, so they really do a lot of engagement. They spend 45% more than the average customer, online customer does. So they're very engaged, they're high spenders. They're not more affluent than anyone else, and their age is about the same, but they spend an awful lot more. The same is true with those people who read reviews, and so it is a tremendously attractive customer base to be going after. So even if you don't have reviews, you certainly want to be soliciting reviews and feedback from customers. And retailers shouldn't be scared about doing this because, in fact, more consumers say that they are willing to give feedback or they have given feedback to retailers or to their friends about positive experiences than they are about negative experiences. In fact, negative experiences are not nearly as often portrayed as positive ones. So you don't want to be all that afraid, but you have to ask for the feedback. Retailers definitely need to actually actively solicit feedback from consumers because most consumers, the reason that they said they gave feedback to a retailer is because the retailer asked for it. They took a survey, they got an email, something like that. Few actually give the feedback proactively, positive or negative. And so once you're using this feedback and you're taking, say the feedback is in the form of reviews, you're taking these reviews, you really need to be presenting the full story. And that means positive reviews and negative reviews, the full story. And because consumers won't find it credible if it's not the full story. And the whole point of actually having these reviews is certainly to drive your business, but also to gain that added value credibility that a consumer who has lived and breathed with the product in a way that no manufacturer or no retailer probably ever has or ever will, has and has written about what their personal experience is. And what consumers really want to know is the quality really there? Is the product as reliable as they say it is? And I'm not going to believe it if the manufacturer says it or if the retailer says it, but if somebody who has this grill in their backyard is telling me that, yes, it works, then, you know what, I'm going to start to believe that. So retailers are a little concerned about doing this. They're concerned about managing it, which is actually a very valid concern, because you really can't automate the review entirely, the review process or the examination process of the reviews you get back from consumers. It's still something that you can automate, looking for certain, you know, profane words or certain phrases that would be offensive. But in fact, you can't really fully automate the whole process, and you still have to have a manual review, and that is difficult to scale even at this point.
Now, even with the manual review, one of the concerns on consumer-generated content has been that it is ripe for being gamed, that manufacturers can access that and can flood these kinds of sites with positive reviews, and the clever ones can even flood them with positive reviews which all point out some negative aspect to gain credibility and game them that way.
Well, it is. It's a tough one, and because consumers will not buy it. I mean, they will see it. So there's two approaches to this. One is through the manual review. Retailers have to look at the source of where these reviews are coming from. They have to really carefully look at the reviews to see if they can find a trend. Some of the retailers or the comparison shopping sites who have had reviews for years have created their own sort of approaches in how they figure that they can detect this from happening, and have done pretty well by that. The other way to do it is use the community that you're developing on your website to do it for you to a degree. Is how useful was this review, you know, clicks, or did you find this review offensive or not useful in a certain way? Solicit feedback from the people who are using or giving the feedback, and in fact, to some degree, they may be finding ways to police it themselves. But the key is you have to respond. So you can't solicit that feedback and not do anything about it. You have to be prepared to do something with that information.
What kind of things are Forrester seeing about user-generated comments?
Very similar to the results that seem very similar to what everything that Patty's already cited in the Jupiter study. Some of the other interesting parts of customer reviews that we're hearing about, and I was having a conversation with the founder of a company that actually manages customer reviews. It's a company in Texas called Bizarre Voice, and one of the advantages that their clients seem to get is actually search engine optimization, because as you have more user reviews on the site, it's more likely that the items and the categories that you're talking about, they're created in text form, and they'll show up in search results when somebody goes to look for whatever item it is that they're looking for in Google or in Yahoo. And that's a tremendous benefit. Search engine optimization is something that retailers are only now sort of getting their arms around, and this is one way to help that. Another is that so much of the value of customer reviews is around engaging those best customers who are actually the ones writing the reviews. Mm-hmm. So it's more than just, you know, how is it that you're able to persuade other consumers to come in and to get that community element of, you know, what are other consumers thinking about when they see this product? But it's the actual engagement of the individual who's writing the review, and the fact that they're going to come back multiple times to look and see if their review is posted, or they're going to come back to see how others may have rated their review. So those are the kinds of things that seem to engage those best customers. Like I said, there are these other benefits in the interactive marketing world beyond just the actual incorporation of the reviews and how they drive sales.
Yeah, you know, that's a really great point, because what we see, people like Bizarre Voice are pretty smart about the way they're thinking about the added benefit of the information and the engagement that you're getting from these customers. And in fact, what it really turns out to be is that these can be a core component in your overall customer touchpoint management strategy. So from the standpoint of, you know, soliciting the reviews once somebody's already been to you, or soliciting feedback once they've read a review, and actually tying that into a whole sort of cyclical consumer touchpoint strategy that really actually hits them in many locations, search externally, email, filtering up reviews in email, saying, you know, can we use your review and use it in an email? How exciting is that for me to be publicized in a company marketing campaign? So there's lots of ways that retailers should be thinking about using these the reviews and the whole idea of consumer feedback.
Absolutely. And the one other piece that I would add about the retailer resistance that Patty was talking about initially is this fear of the negative reviews being showcased on your site. And, oh, my goodness, what is that going to happen? What is that going to do? And the consumer's actually wanting the balanced approach. Another innovative retailers who do take the negative reviews are actually in a better position, because not only do you have this neutral approach, but you can actually leverage those negative customer reviews to help your merchandising strategy. And that's what eBags does, is that they take their negative reviews, and they've been collecting reviews very aggressively over the last several years, and they have tens of thousands of reviews on their site. And they take their negative reviews and actually give it as feedback to their merchants. So if they know that some product has consistently received negative reviews, that maybe there's something to go back to the vendor and ask them to fix on the product. So over time, you give this feedback loop directly from the consumer, and you can ultimately get better products that help everybody.
I think that's really important. It's interesting to me that a lot of vendors are starting to open their own stores, not just for vehicles for sales vehicles, but also to get consumer feedback. So this is a much less expensive way to do that.
It's a huge way to actually learn. And you know, interestingly, looping back to Evan, your sort of introduction was talking about Netflix, is in fact they did, you know, they started with the critiques, the Ebert and Roper critical reviews of the movies on their website when they first started, thinking, you know, this is the standard, this is what people are interested in reading, and so we'll provide it. And then later on, they added the reviews a few, year or two later of the consumers, and they put them together and actually showed the difference of ratings. So if you know, Ebert and Roper gave it two thumbs up, but consumers only gave it one thumb up, you know, they would show the comparison. And over time, the feedback that they got from consumers was, hey, you know, I don't really care about the critics' reviews, but what I care about and I find much more useful are the consumer reviews, which actually led Netflix to drop the critiques and now only use consumer reviews. Mm-hmm. And they use them in ways to really feed the long tail of their business. And this will work in some product categories and not so well in others, but they feed the long tail business by using really well-reviewed, maybe smaller movies that will rent better than maybe even some of the blockbusters, because they because the reviews are so good and they're you know, somewhat undiscovered.
I guess I have a problem getting my hands around that, from the sense of it seems so ripe for manipulation, that if you remove the critics from that scenario and you have consumer reviews only, what's to prevent an aggressive publicity department from a motion picture facility that is putting out a review to flood it with negative reviews, get the numbers up, and if they're not including traditional reviews to do a reality check, that's what I'm trying to figure out. How can you possibly police that kind of feedback?
Well, fortunately, I think that the movie industry is one where there's so much passion from a consumer standpoint that if somebody is, they're taking a dog movie and saying things about it which are clearly untrue, that somebody is going to come out and you know, call them to the carpet. So I think that that's definitely one area where I wouldn't worry about the vendors getting in the business and just creating, you know, falsities about their product. I would worry about it more where, you know, there isn't as much passion, like certain types of apparel or, you know, more commoditized products where there isn't that degree of consumer engagement.
Yeah, and you know, the example of that, the example of blogs and corporate blogs and seeding of blogs by corporations to serve their own marketing purposes has really been sort of outed, and consumers have been able to see through that, you know, sort of very thinly veiled strategy. And I believe that will be the case in the reviews as well. And again, you know, there are back end strategies to try and determine if you're being seeded that you know aren't going to be foolproof by any stretch of the imagination, but certainly can kick out some of the more blatant attempts. And again, you know, okay, so say Warner Brothers gets away with it once, and then the second time they get caught, you know, what is the consumer backlash against Warners? Is it worth it to them? Given the ability to filter up maybe a small issue into the public eye so vehemently these days, that I just wonder if it's really worth it for them to put the effort for a one-shot deal.